the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Hello and welcome to Pure Home with me, Sahar Haqju. Well, peace, calm, tranquility, and happiness are goals that we all seek to have in our homes. In our discussion today, we hope to help you reach that goal by discussing mindfulness and its implications among family members. As we did last week, we'll continue and get more into that discussion this week. And of course, we have other segments to our program, so you'll definitely want to stay tuned to hear more. Welcome back to the program. Well, we're honored to have Dr. Sayed Mohsen Fatemi back with us to discuss mindfulness and implications for family members. Dr. Fatemi has done his postdoctoral studies at Harvard University. He's also taught at Harvard University and at the University of Toronto in the psychology departments, and he also collaborates with the University of Tehran. He's a registered psychologist and a keynote speaker at a number of international congresses. He's a published author and has conducted seminars and workshops. He's also recently been selected as part of the advisory and editorial board of the American Psychology Association Encyclopedia of Critical Psychology. So it's great to have you back with us, Dr. Fatemi. And for all of our viewers who are just tuning in, they didn't tune in last week, just give us a refresher and tell us a little bit that we talked about last week. And we basically define mindfulness, mindlessness, and just a brief review of what they need to know to follow our discussion today.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We had a discussion on mindfulness and mindlessness and discussed how mindfulness can be created through observing, understanding novel points, novel ideas. Also, we had a discussion on how you may act from a single perspective, and that single perspective may impose mindlessness against you. When you are creative and you are seeking novelty and understand the possibility of looking into novel areas, it's like fighting for otherwise. You get yourself released and liberated from the tyrannical subjugation of the routinized and mundane aspects of behavior. And as a result of that, you just go ahead beyond the mundane and banal layers of reality. So mindfulness is going to be characterized through a number of points, including creating novel ideas, creating novel points, understanding the possibility of looking into something new instead of just being exposed to the routinized, forms of accustomed behavior. The second point is that when you're mindful, you look into the context, and as you look into the context, you also explore possibilities of novel complexions. The third point is that you're not just going to be outcome-oriented, you're going to be process-oriented as well, and you scrutinize the process of understanding multifarious components instead of getting yourself subjugated to just one flux of ideas. As a result of mindfulness, you become creative. So mindfulness and creativity, one may argue, are natural partners. When you're mindful, we also had a concentration on this, that when you're mindful, you have numerous choices. You would have the possibility of understanding how choices may make a difference in your life. I gave you an example of, you could have had orange juice, for example, for the past 15 years of your life. Tomorrow, when you wake up and you're mindful, you say, well, I can have apple juice, I can have something else. And as a result of that something else, you become more perceptive towards external, internal factors of your life. So as mindfulness goes up, your choices are going to go up. And because of your choices, you understand the possibility of a transcendental look into your life. Whereas mindlessness is going to just get you transfixed in one stage. You do not have the plausibility of looking beyond the context, and as a result of that, you would be, condemned because of those external, internal factors. So mindfulness is tantamount to more choices, more understanding, more emancipation, more perceptiveness, more assertiveness, more creativity, and more novelty, not only in interpersonal life, but also in interpersonal life, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I wonder is, for a person who's basically lived a whole life of mindlessness and somewhat been, by these barriers, they've created these barriers and these impediments, and they haven't, they've been like this for quite some time. Is it easy to switch over to mindfulness? Can they do that? Or?
Well, switching can happen when you have conscious raising. If you do not have consciousness, and if you do not understand how mindfulness may make a difference, you still have, the same recursive pattern of the previously established paradigms. Bear in mind that when we are mindless, we often obey and abide by the pre-endorsed, pre-established forms of understanding, mm-hmm. Going ahead from our upbringing to educational mm-hmm. schooling, all of them. So when we have consciousness and when we develop that sense of perspicacity, that sense of wisdom that, allows us to understand and revise the possibility of going beyond the script, we become mindful. And this cannot happen if you're living through your habits, because habits are like a soft bed. It's easy to get into them. It's hard to get out of them. It just gets you circumscribed in one position, and as a result of that position, you just get yourself encapsulated in that position. Mm-hmm. When you become mindful, you get yourself liberated, but that liberation is going to be associated with an understanding, an awareness. An awareness is the prerequisite, the preamble of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. When we become mindful, we have somehow implicitly or explicitly endorsed how this awareness may give rise to looking into new horizons. Whereas our habits, our upbringing, our educational, our schooling, our friends, our association with concepts, and our priming based on our mindsets may somehow develop one form of mindsets that does not allow us to just go beyond those scripts. And automatically we have nothing except those scripts when we have some stimulus. So imagine, for example, when you go, for example, to a new situation. Based on your automatic thoughts give you priming. So instead of thinking about what is it that I'm going to do, what is the proper response, what kind of suitable response I'm going to come up with, you just automatically obey and abide by what you have been cultivated through or what you have been exposed to. And accordingly, you do not have any sense of going beyond those scripts.
Mm-hmm. So the first step to changing those predetermined routine ideas, or get to step out of the box, out of that framework, the first step would be to acknowledge that you are mindless, and then take it from there.
And that acknowledgement needs to be positively reinforced, or it needs to be substantiated through awareness. So if you do not have awareness, if you do not have that sense of perceptiveness, understanding that tells you, okay, I'm going to be mindless. What are the implications of mindlessness? What are the implications of mindfulness? Let's compare and see how these comparison, for example, and contrast may help me become a better person. Because when you are mindful, you go through what I call the renaissance of the self. And the renaissance of the self is associated with a sense of revitalization. And you revitalize yourself in the sense that you do not just go ahead with the pre-established scripts that have been made for you, have been somehow created for you. You become somebody else, because of this mindfulness. So you see yourself, becoming proactively involved in terms of your own creation. And as a result of that creation, you become involved in, determining, deciding, and understanding what would be the best option for you for your own personal or interpersonal life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think it's quite beautiful. If you make that transition, then you have a whole new outlook on life. Like you said, if you understand the creation, then you go back to Creator, and you have a whole new view, and I'm sure the enjoyment level of life would just...
Because, you just having said that, we can also ascertain that when we become mindful, we are going to go through a perspective that is going to develop management of the perspective, and also it develops a shift of perspective. Mm-hmm. So as I am mindful, I just have the possibility of going from this perspective to the other perspective. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I am mindless, I am just encapsulated, I am incarcerated within one single monolithic perspective, and that perspective mm-hmm. does not necessarily give me the potential alternatives that I'm going to explore, for my choices, for my understanding. And because of that, I may you know, gradually go through a form of paralysis, and that paralysis is going to develop that sense of, you know, compartmentalization, because I am going to love the mindsets, because the mindset is going to confirm how these long-standing habits and, you know, things that I have been associated with for a long lifetime are going to identify me as I am. Whereas when I am becoming mindful, I understand that this mindfulness is associated with a shift of perspective. So in terms of anxiety, in terms of management of fear, panic attack, you know, issues like trepidation, stage fright, to name a few, or other issues, for example, lack of rapport, lack of understanding, all of them would develop that sense of empowerment. And because of that empowerment, you get yourself into a new avenue of becoming. And this avenue is going to give you an exhilarating sense, a fragrance of associating yourself with new concepts, novel ideas, and you become somebody else because you befriend new concepts that you're going to explore, and you see them inside the context instead of just, you know, understanding them away the context. So your interaction, your correspondence, your communication, all of them are going to go through a new form of life. Mm-hmm. Half of you is going to be developed through this revitalization, and the other half is going to come up with understanding novel ideas, novel categories through this process of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, lovely. Well, we will take a break and listen to our story, and when we come back, we'll try to connect mindfulness to the implications it has among family members. Don't go away.
Thief near a well. A man had a sheep. He had fastened a rope around its neck and pulled the sheep behind him. A thief was lying in ambush. In a moment, the thief grabbed the rope from the man, stole the sheep, and escaped. The sheep owner was shocked. He looked for his sheep for a long time until he arrived at a well. He saw a man sitting near the well and crying. The man was shouting, "What a disaster! What a misery!" The sheep owner asked, "What's the matter?" The man answered, "I had a bag of gold coins. It has fallen into the well. If you can take it out of the well for me, I'll give you 20% of the coins as a reward." The man thought, 20 gold coins is the price of 10 sheep. The thief stole my sheep, but I can earn more in this way. He took off his clothes and went into the well. The man near the well was the same thief who had stolen his sheep. He picked up the sheep owner's clothes immediately and stole them too.
Welcome back to the program. Well, if you've just tuned in, we're here with Dr. Fatemi, and we're speaking about mindfulness and its implications among family members. And we did a brief review of what we spoke about last week. And to move on, we want to know, what are some of the factors that impede mindfulness? So if we want to attain that state, what are some barriers?
Well, there are plenty of factors that impede the process of mindfulness. among them, one can point out the following. One of them is the fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of getting disapproved, fear of being disliked. All these fears, along with the anxieties that you've got, you know, butterflies in the stomach, jitters and all of them, plus frustration from the past experiences, may not allow you to become mindful because they serve as roadblocks. And these roadblocks deprive you of looking into novel avenues. As these fears go up and, you know, get you exasperated because of the process of mindlessness, you do not see that possibility of mindfulness into your life. And as a result of that, you see yourself repeating and going through the same recursive pattern of the previously established mindless forms.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get past these? I mean, that fear, that nervousness, because I think these are probably pretty strong feelings, pretty strong
right.
impediments that probably block you from thinking out the box, if you will.
Or, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. One of them is to understand and realize that how our proactive thinking, how mindful thinking differs from automatic thinking. Automatic thinking is usually associated with a mindless form of judgment, evaluation, and assessment. So when you see somebody, for example, when you enter a place, when you meet some folks or something, you automatically think about something. And these automatic thoughts are usually mindless. They give you some patterns from the previously endorsed patterns of thinking because of schemas. If at that moment you can also indicate that, well, I've got the possibility of going through these proactive thoughts. For example, you're in a restaurant, you have, for example, an extra dish, and once you have it, you just have these thoughts and anxiety that, well, I'm going to gain some more weight, and because of that fear, you mindlessly see yourself incarcerated through the paralysis of, you know, fear of rejection and all of them. But at that time, if you just like, you have a remote control, you're watching a program, if you don't like the program, what would you do? You just change the program. Mm-hmm. You understand the agency behind that change. You understand the agency behind those choices. So when you become mindful, as these automatic thoughts, you know, impose their sort of flux against you, you point out that, well, I'm not going to be just succumbing myself to the inundation of these mindless thoughts. I'm going to be, you know, somebody else because of the proactive thoughts. And proactive thoughts are the thoughts that you create, are the ones that you choose. And understanding the difference between proactive thoughts and automatic thoughts would help you develop more empowerment. And as you experience experientially the sense of empowerment, you understand that through all these experiences, you can always have a choice of going ahead with the automatic thoughts, which are mainly baseless and, you know, mindless, or you can choose mindful thoughts. And that understanding allows you to get that sense of empowerment because you can see that you're not going to be thrown off the center. When you're mindless, you are thrown off the center. And because you're thrown off the center, you don't see how the process may change, how you can have a radical transformation of consciousness because of that change, and therefore your agency is going to be marginalized. When you become mindful, your agency is going to go up and your fears are going to be managed by that sense of agency. Your emotional management is going to be serving as a preamble for management of fears, and you challenge all those fears. So you see, for example, a friend of yours, he may not give you a sort of a confirmation, he gives you a cold shoulder, and as a result of that, you feel bad. This is a primary thought along with a primary emotion. When you become mindful, your secondary thoughts are going to revise your primary thoughts, and as a result of that, your secondary emotions are going to go and change. Whereas when you're mindless, you just go ahead with your primary thoughts, which are basically automatic. You do not have any sense of revising, revamping, revolutionizing those thoughts, and you become the victim of those thoughts because of the paralysis of choices.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting because you were saying you feel jailed or incarcerated probably because of that lack of empowerment. Maybe if you, it's probably a struggle at first because what you're doing is you're getting through that fear and you're not succumbing to those predetermined ideas. And then maybe at that point, once you start to struggle and you have more choices, then you feel more empowered, and that with that comes probably a new confidence. So you feel
right.
more and more empowered and leading to more mindfulness, I guess, a step-by-step process.
Exactly. When you have self-confidence and confidence goes up, self-empowerment goes up. Self-empowerment is going to give rise to self-management. Self-management is going to contribute to emotional management. And emotional management is going to corroborate and substantiate the possibility of having choices. And as you have choices, you understand how your choices in your own context may make a difference. And as a result of that difference, you can just go ahead from one context to the other context. But you understand how you can not just be bound by the context, but you can determine context. In other words, when people are mindful, they determine the context. They create the context. When they are mindless, they just get, you know, incarcerated, paralyzed, and, you know, encapsulated by those contexts. And as a result of that, they get this emotional hijacking. You know, when you have emotional hijacking or emotional kidnapping, you don't have any possibility of choices. It's like you're overwhelmed by that flux of emotions. Mm-hmm. You don't see anything else. Look at people, for example, who are depressed, disappointed, frustrated, and do not have any horizon of hope. And as a result of that paralysis, they don't see anything except that context of desperation, frustration, despair, despondency, and all of them. And they get overwhelmed by the flux of this mindlessly shaped form of despondency, so they do not have any acknowledgement of, you know, hey, wake up and smell the coffee, break this, and you can just go ahead. But because they're overwhelmed by that flux of despondency, they do not see themselves as liberated. Mm-hmm. Once they become mindful, they say, hey, my understanding, not just from an automatic perspective, but from a proactive perspective, can make a difference. And I often use this analogy that if you're watching a program, for example, you've got numerous channels, you're watching a program, you don't like it, what would you do? You just change the channel. You've got a remote control, you go from channel 1 to 2, you just switch from one, you know, to the other. Once you have these automatic thoughts, rushed, for example, and then the flux of these automatic thoughts are going to be say, well, I am going to have, you know, the plausibility, the potential, the possibility of going through one to the other, and this agency is going to be associated with that sense of empowerment. But you got to do it phenomenologically to understand how this may make a difference. So mindfulness is associated with creation. You understand mindfulness, you understand the capabilities of how you can constitute, create, and shape new novel ideas.
Great. Okay, well, we will take a break and we'll be coming back. It's time for From Here and There. Welcome back to the program. Well, it's time for From Here and There with my colleague, Mahdi Goldzadeh. Sometimes he has medical revelations, sometimes interesting sights. We'll see what he has for us today. Mr. Goldzadeh, over to you.
Thank you, Mrs. Arju.
You're welcome.
Well, hello, dear viewers. Welcome to this part of the program, From Here and There. Now, the first article. Let's be real. Most of us have a sweet tooth. And if we had our way, sugary treats would be a food group themselves. At the same time, we know that while sweets are enticing and addictive, sugar consumed in excess has been linked to weight gain, premature aging, and type 2 diabetes. So I found some surprising alternatives to the white stuff that come with added health benefits as well. Number one would be honey. Honey is antimicrobial, antibacterial, and antifungal, so much so that it's even been used to treat wounds. Now, the second one, this may seem a bit odd, but a tiny pinch of salt can enhance the natural sweetness in many ingredients and dishes, and especially in anything with fresh fruits. Now, you know your mother's recipe for spaghetti sauce calls for sugar. Try grated carrots instead. Their natural sugars bring just the right amount of sweetness with no added sugar. Much of the refined sugar you eat comes from beets. They are amongst the sweetest plants growing. Try them in smoothies, grated into your next chocolate cake, or in soups for an unexpectedly sweet taste. Now, salad dressings are prime suspect when it comes to identifying hidden sugar in your diet. Make your own salad dressing with olive oil and lemon juice and sweeten it slightly with a splash of vitamin C-packed fresh squeezed orange juice. Now, if none of the above solutions solve your sugar dilemma, you may want to reach for a sugar substitute. Of the currently available options, stevia, which is derived from a herb and has been used in certain parts of the world for centuries, is probably your healthiest bet. It's super sweet, many times sweeter than sugar or honey, and you should be, or it should be used in moderation. Welcome back. Now, in Hong Kong, boiled Coke and lemon is a common remedy for cold. Adding salt to your Sprite or 7-Up helps soothing sore throat. Now, boiled Coke and lemon is a remedy that started in Hong Kong. There's a story about a businessman who was trying to sell his Coke during winter time, but people wanted hot drinks. So he boiled it with lemon and claimed that it would cure cold. That business trick became a remedy that people in Hong Kong have been practicing for decades. Now, many who try soda drinks as remedy can't really explain how it works. According to researchers, it's a known fact that lemon contains vitamin C, which helps with cold. In their opinion, adding Coke is just to make it taste better and balances the tartness and acidity of lemon. Same explanation applies to the remedy of Sprite and salt that is said to soothe sore throat. Sore throat means there is inflammation, and when there is inflammation, there is accumulation of fluids. Salt is a natural dehydrator as it draws water out from the cells. Soda like Sprite or 7-Up only add taste to this solution. So you can try it, it may work for you. Now, a new study by researchers has found that parents who are unsuccessful in having children are at a higher risk of premature death. The study found that the death rate amongst childless parents was significantly higher than those with children, especially in women, adding that adoption may decrease the risk. The researchers studied over 21,000 childless couples who had been receiving treatment for infertility from 1994 to 2005. They found that while over 15,000 children were born during these years, 1,600 couples tried adoption. Some 220 men and about 100 women died, and 700 women and nearly 550 men were diagnosed with a mental disease. The study suggested that the premature death rate, cancer and accidents amongst childless women was 4 times higher than those who had been mothers. For childless men, the death rate was twice higher than biological fathers. Now, if you can't have a child, don't try killing yourself having one. A good option is adopting. You will give another human being a new life and also a new life to yourself. Well, that was it from me. I hope you enjoyed this part of the program from here and there. As usual, you can visit us at sahatv.tv, or you could also email us as well at purehome@sahatv.tv, or call us directly on 0098 212216, 2887, or 0098 212216 2854. Back to you, Mr. Arjun.
Thank you, Mr. Govzada. Lots of new concoctions, I guess, for healthier choices in life. I'm not sure if I'd be willing to try
healthy
some
body,
of them,
healthy mind,
but I think so. maybe for more mindful than then we could switch to healthy options. Thank you for that. Okay, well, in 2001, Shahid Beheshti University is one of the comprehensive universities of Iran, established a center called Family Research Institute. Now, this was motivated by the changes created in families, problems of couples, issues related to children, women and the elderly. This institute deals with these issues and conducts research about them and plans for them and makes policies for them. Here's more about the Family Research Institute.
If you think for a short while, you will see that throughout the history, family has been the most effective institution in the improvement and evolution of human beings. For the same reason, it has received more attention than any other institution all over the world. During the last couple of decades, families have undergone great changes. The traditional extended family has been replaced by nucleus family.
These changes have caused great concerns in the society, which relates to developmental issues caused by people's childhood and their family members. These changes have created some confusion, which has forced researchers and policymakers to try to find solutions in accordance with their own cultural conditions. Family is the most sacred institution effective in people's lives, perhaps the most basic and fundamental relations, which have both genetic and innate aspects, are formed in a family. Initial trainings and preparations for entering the society are formed in the family. Shahid Behesht University, as one of the comprehensive universities of Iran, decided to establish a center called Family Research Institute in 2001. This was motivated by the changes created in families, problems of couples, issues related to children, issues related to women, and issues related to the elderly. This institute deals with these issues, conducts research about them, and plans for them, and makes policy for them. In fact, Family Research Institute is perhaps the first research center in Iran which officially studies about different family issues. I can say that there are four groups in this research center. One of these groups is called Fundamental Studies Group. It studies sociological issues, the laws related to family, and ethnographical issues. They also study families with special needs, such as families where one member has a chronic disease, such as cancer or diabetes, or families where one child has a problem, such as autism or mental or physical disorders. Another group, which is called Family Sanitation Group, studies the issues of women, the elderly, and children. Another group is devoted to and studies child rearing and the relationship between parents and children. Besides these four groups, there is an excellence center in the institute, which is a research reference about family for people interested in studying family from all over the country. Such people can cooperate with this excellence center and receive support from it. The institute in general and the Family Excellence Center in particular try to both identify family problems and help solve them by planning, policy making, and submitting the plans to policymakers. We also offer people some services. We have two specialized clinics. One of them is the Family and Children Clinic, which has both educational and treatment functions. People who have marital problems or those who have problematic relationships with their children can take advantage of modern techniques used throughout the world, some of which have been domesticized. We also have a specialized autism clinic, which is devoted to parents and children suffering from this disorder. Moreover, five series of MA students are studying family therapy in this institute, and we are going to accept PhD students in this major the next year. These students will become experts who work on the issues of couples, families, parents, and children, and they will be employed by such organizations as legal and judicial institutes and welfare offices. Family Research Institute is a specialized institute which has held five international congresses up to now, the last one of which was the International Congress of Family and Globalization. Well, in this congress, we studied the effects of globalization on factors which turn extended cohesive families into nuclear isolated ones. Our next congress will be about family issues. We have a quarterly called the Journal of Family Research, which has been published in more than 30 issues. It is a completely academic research journal and works on open specialized areas related to family. The team gathered together in Shahid Behesht University, which has counterparts in other parts of Iran, has targeted the issue of family in a specialized manner. In fact, it has created a comprehensive interdisciplinary approach. We know that family is an issue which needs consultation from different areas and disciplines. Sanitation, medicine, law, psychiatry, anthropology, and sociology are all related to family. In fact, this small institution is interconnected to and influenced by large institutions of the society. Therefore, we have tried in this institute to gather specialists from different disciplines such as law, sociology, social medicine, clinical psychology, and other specializations. These people form the faculty members of this institute. In this way, we are trying to have a comprehensive approach towards the issue and to create a suitable center for meeting the needs of the society.
Welcome back. Well, we're continuing our discussion about mindfulness, and now we want to know, how does mindfulness influence family relationships, Dr. Fatemi?
Yeah, well, mindfulness has an impact on quality of relationship. And you probably know that most of the research has acknowledged that family ties are going to be influenced by quality of relationship. If they have a poor quality, they're going to have a destructive pattern, and that destructive pattern is going to annihilate the quality of the family issues, and as a result of that, they're going to go through this slope of failure. Whereas if they have this great quality of relationship, they're going to be expanded all the time. They're going to go through this expansion of understanding. It's going to allow them to blossom, and this is going to be associated with mindfulness. When you're mindful, you are going to care about relationship. You're going to focus on, well, I have a body, but in the meantime, I have a soul. And then mindfulness is going to recognize that the soul needs to be cured, the soul needs to be cared for. So you see, mindfulness is going to be associated with an understanding from an Islamic perspective of the concept presented by Islam, in the sense that you're not just your body, you just need to pay attention to your soul too. And as you pay attention to your desires, your aspirations in the realm of the body, you are also going to pay attention towards the realm of the soul. And that soul is going to be understood through the recognition, through the sense of belonging, and that sense of belonging is going to be epitomized through this relationship. And this relationship is going to have intrapersonal and interpersonal impact, so that belonging is going to help you get connected to a larger realm of meaning. And when people have got that, you know, larger realm of meaning, they acknowledge that, well, I can have identity, I can have that inner self, and that inner self is going to provide them with a sense of composure, with a sense of tranquility and joy and peace and, you know, calmness and all of them. Because imagine that, for example, you want to fly off the handle, you go bananas because of something that has happened to you. But when you become mindful, you just have this horizon of possibility of anger right in front of your eyes, but in the meantime you have all these multifarious avenues of possibilities, and you say, well, what if this happens, and what if I go with this option? So you look into the option and you create novel ideas all the time, continuously, and this helps you pull yourself together instead of getting yourself, you know, overwhelmed by the flux of emotional kidnapping.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, just to refer back to last week's discussion, how you said if you look mindfully at your spouse or your children or any kind of relationship within the family, maybe find something new about them every day.
Exactly.
Appreciate, new appreciation, yeah. I think.
You know, and I have always used this in my counseling and, you know, practice that. I recommend that, for example, to people, look at your partner's new aspects. You know, you always explore 5 positive new things. Not just the positive things, but the new things. And you can see that even for yourself. Just, you know, go in front of the mirror and see yourself from 5 positive perspectives, physically, psychologically, spiritually, and you see that your feeling is going to develop a new sense of self, and this new sense of self is going to be exhilarating because it helps you remove the fatigue, the burnout, the frustration that you have experienced because of that monotonous, you know, overwhelming sense of habituation because of the past. So you experience this fresh, novel, exquisite sense of belonging, and you can examine the same thing for people around yourself. So you look into your partner's ideas, you look into your partner's complexion, you disclose, you explore, you know, you understand how these new ideas, new complexion, new countenance may give rise to new feeling, and as a result of that, you see yourself, you know, generating novel process for your own relationship.
Mm-hmm. And so that leads into what's the relationship between mindfulness and the enhancement of joy and peace among these family members?
It's a great question. When you're mindful, you experience everything afresh. When you're mindless, things are going to happen to you because of a monotonous inundation of the previously prescribed pattern. So you look at, for example, this, and you just see it based on schemas that you're familiar with because you have befriended them in the past, and nothing is going to open up except those schemas. When you're mindful, it's like everything is going to be experienced right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's like an outsider who comes to your house and shows you or shares with you something that he or she has experienced, and you say, oh wow, I mean, I have not seen this. Or you go to a new place, and as you go to a new place, you experience a new joy, mm-hmm. because you see something that you may not have seen in the places that mm-hmm. you've been experiencing so far. So when you have mindfulness, it gets you connected to a larger concept, a larger realm, and a larger domain mm-hmm. of experiencing things, you know, right from the beginning. And this experience is going to get you afresh a concept, an idea, a configuration of a phenomenological trend of exploring exquisite fragrance of life. You know, it's like you just go to a garden and see all these blossoms and, you know, blossoms and everything around you, and they give you a sense of redolence that you're not going to be, you know, ignoring, because it just provides you with a sense of new possibility, and this new possibility is going to have an emotional impact on you. When people are tired, when people are burned out, when people have got this experience of fatigue in all of them, they have it because they mindlessly repeat the same sort of patterns that they have. But look at yourself. I mean, you can just go in front of the mirror and look at your own finger and see it from a new perspective. That shift of perspective is going to provide you with a sense of exhilaration, with a sense of awe, with a sense of, well, this is something else. And always that renewal, that revitalization is going to provide you with emotional, effective implications.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Fatemi. I think all of our viewers, myself included, we really appreciate the fact that if you do make this transition and you take, and we do take these words into consideration, it starts intrinsically, then step by step, it has its effects on family members and society, and then ultimately your relationship, yeah. excuse me, with the Creator. Thank you so much for enlightening us and sharing your ideas and your time with us. And to all of our viewers, thanks for tuning in. And don't forget, you can go on our site, sahartv.tv, and do email us, purehome@sahartv.ir. Thanks so much for inviting us into your pure home. Until next time, goodbye and God bless.